Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's four terms in a row for Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel, but what do Africans have to say to that?
Angela Merkel is mature even politically. Her party lost a number of seats, and while she was speaking on Sunday, she said her party would look into reasons why they lost. In Uganda, a loser would be running to court.
Zimbabwe's pastor and activist Evan Mawarire is back in custody after making this appeal.
I was in supermarkets and I was having a look at prices. Prices have shot up. We must do something about this. We cannot, hear me, we cannot just sit back.
Just some of the stories we've lined up for you. Hello and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura, live in Bonn, Germany. As always, before we take you to the continent, here's a chance to hear what's been making headlines across the world.
My name is Jen Nyinge with DW News. Germany's far-right and anti-immigration AfD is now the third largest party after Sunday's elections. Re-elected Chancellor Angela Merkel has urged other political parties to help her form a coalition government. After failing to secure majority seats in parliament, she has vowed to win back voters who left her party.
Wir haben etwa 1,3 Millionen Wählerinnen und Wähler an die FDP verloren und
approximately we lost about 1.3 million voters to the FDP and about 1 million to the AfD. With a view to the voters of AfD, we have to recover them through good policy by solving problems.
Wiederzugewinnen, zurückzugewinnen.
Meanwhile, the anti-immigration AfD party has criticized the proposed coalition to form the next German government, calling it a move to prevent them from being the leading opposition force. The center-left Social Democrats, SPD, Merkel's partner since 2013 in Grand Coalition, are said to become the largest parliamentary opposition. Zimbabwe pastor Evan Mawarire appeared in court today and pleaded not guilty to the charge of trying to subvert President Robert Mugabe's government. Mawarire made the plea at the start of his trial at the Harare High Court. The Kurdish people living in northern Iraq have been voting on an independence referendum despite opposition from several nations, including the US and the UK. More than 3 million people will go to the ballot, with majority expected to support their independence to break away from Iraqi leadership. Turkey and Iraq have threatened punitive measures against the Kurdish regional government, and the Turkish president, Tayyip Erdogan, has said that this might include even a military intervention.
It is definitely not acceptable to take steps towards division at a time Iraq needs unity and solidarity more than ever. Iran is also taking steps, as well as our air forces.
You are listening to DW Germany's broadcaster. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has called a snap election, saying he needs a new mandate, especially on his defense policy towards North Korea. The announcement comes as tensions with North Korea are escalating after North Korea fired two missiles over northern Japan and carried out a nuclear test last month. Abe says his goal is for his Liberal Democratic Party and coalition partner Komeito to retain a majority in parliament.
I hope to win a public mandate in the election and to take firm measures against North Korea in cooperation with the international community.
Moving on, Sudan has vowed to step up efforts to normalize relations with the United States after Washington dropped the country from a list of countries facing a U.S. travel ban. President Donald Trump decided to remove Sudan from the list just days ahead of an October 12 decision on whether to permanently lift decades-old U.S. sanctions on Khartoum. For more news and information, visit our website, dw.com, or you can as well download our app. My name is Jen Nyinge.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link with me, Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideu. Shock, relief and disappointment is how one can describe the results of the German election. There's relief for some that Chancellor Angela Merkel has been re-elected. But shock for others, because the far-right AfD is now the third strongest party in Germany. Nevertheless, African countries, like the rest of the world, closely followed the election. Let's listen to some reactions from a few of them.
I'm Evelyn Kpade in Monrovia. Following Angela Merkel's fourth-term re-election as Germany's chancellor, some Liberians have congratulated her on her successes. Others, however, are doubtful of Liberia having another female president as they go to the polls on October 10th. Africa's first female president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, ends her second term early 2018. Here's what John Prosper Namaya, a former government official on Charles Taylor regime, had to say following the announcement of the German election results.
I think it's unprecedented in politics. Even though our constitution in Liberia forbids anyone going more than two terms, and that's the only reason why I think President Sirleaf may not have the opportunity to go. And she doesn't want to be like most of these East African countries are now changing their constitution to allow their presidents to run perpetually.
From Nairobi, Kenya, this is Andrew Wasike. It is still uncertain if the October 26th repeat election will take place after the Supreme Court annulled the results. So, what do Kenyans think about the German elections in relation to theirs?
Maoni yangu ni kwamba kama Wajerumani
wanaweza. My opinion is that if the German people can hold elections while at the same time hosting the Berlin Marathon without any troubles, yet we in Kenya are searching for an election date with every side saying they want a certain date, I am really urging Kenyans to emulate the Germans.
Naomba sana wa Kenya watumie hiyo mfano ya Wajerumani tafadhali.
I am Alex Jita in Kampala. German elections in Uganda were followed by a few elite voters. Some of them told me they admire the maturity of the whole electoral process. Angela Merkel losing seats but pledging to win back lost voters is just rare in Uganda. Janet Kobusinguzi, a law student at Makerere University, followed the elections, and this is what she had to say after listening to Angela Merkel's speech.
Angela Merkel is mature even politically. Her party lost a number of seats, and while she was speaking on Sunday, she said her party would look into reasons why they lost. And I think we need such in Uganda. In Uganda, a loser would be running to court.
I am Isaac Kanleji in Accra. Ghana and Germany have enjoyed strong relations for 60 years, hence the interest by many in Sunday's German elections. Though Chancellor Angela Merkel has been re-elected, many said they were surprised by the weakening of her coalition party and the gains made by her political opponents. Ghana also witnessed its own electoral surprises when current President Akufo-Addo defeated former President John Dramani Mahama.
Isaac Kalechi in Accra, ending thus reactions from a section of Africans and other DW correspondents following Germany's election.
Chancellor Angela Merkel clinched a fourth term in Germany's election Sunday, but her victory was clouded by the entry into parliament of the far-right Alternative für Deutschland, AfD. Merkel's party, the Christian Democratic Union, and its sister party, the CSU, garnered 33% of the votes. The Social Democrats and their candidate, Martin Schulz, came in a distant second with a record low of 21%. So, just what is the way forward now that Merkel must avoid a minority government? I pose this question to our Berlin correspondent, Daniel Pels.
Well, Chancellor Merkel insisted that she wants to form and head the next government, despite the heavy losses of her party. But this time round, it's going to be very, very difficult for her, because the present junior partner in the coalition government, the Social Democrats, announced yesterday that they would now join the opposition and that they would leave the coalition. So Mrs. Merkel is facing an uphill task, and she met the party's leadership of her Christian Democrats this morning. And here's what she told journalists afterwards.
We are going to talk to the FDP, the Greens, and of course also the Social Democrats, so that Germany gets a stable government. I know what the Social Democrats have said, but it's important to remain in touch.
Trotzdem sollte man im Gesprächskontakt bleiben.
We know the far-right AfD captured around 13% of the votes, becoming the country's third biggest political force. Knowing very well what it stands for in terms of anti-migration and anti-Muslim, what does AfD's presence in parliament mean for the next 4 years?
Well, it's going to become much more difficult for the other parties. We have to keep in mind the AfD is a populist party. It ran a very, very aggressive election campaign against foreigners and against Muslims, and a campaign that was much more aggressive than the campaigns that were fought by the other major political parties.
Okay, most notable in this election was Germany's only African-born Bundestag member, Karamba Diaby. Give us the latest about him.
Because his party, the Social Democrats, performed very, very poorly in the polls and suffered an historic low. So in the beginning of the night, it didn't look like he would make it back into parliament. But in the wee hours of Monday morning, it actually turned out that he is going to be a member of the next parliament as well, that he managed to retain his seat.
I was talking to our Berlin correspondent, Daniel Pels.
Right, Zipporah, and very interesting times in Germany at the moment after the elections. Yes. But let's move to Africa now, where Zimbabwean pastor and founder of this flag movement, Evan Mawarire, has been sent back to remand after being charged with subversion. He denied the charges, according to Zimbabwe lawyers for human rights who are representing him in court. Last year, Mawarire led strikes which paralyzed most of the country. From Harare, Columbus Mavunga reports.
The court granted him a $200 bail, but he remains in custody until Tuesday to face new charges emanating from his Saturday videos in which he called for non-violent actions to protest harsh economic times in Zimbabwe. Harrison Nkomo of Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights is representing Pastor Mawarire, who is also the leader of hashtag This Flag Movement.
The Sunday case, there's actually confusion because now he has to oscillate between the police and the prisons. So we are going to get a clearer position tomorrow, considering that the 48-hour period of detention, which they are permitted by law, is expiring tomorrow.
The 40-year-old pastor has been in detention since his arrest at his church on Sunday. He remained defiant before his arrest.
Things have gone bad.
I was in supermarkets and I was having a look at prices. Prices have shot up. We must do something about this. We cannot, hear me, we cannot just sit back and let things go down. We must do something because the future is ours. We're not advocating for violence. We're not advocating for insulting or undermining the authority of the president. We don't know where we're going to be next week. We don't know where we're going to be the week after. Let's start coming together.
Though Mawarire denies any charge of subversion, a charge which carries a 20-year prison term, the state argues that he was calling on citizens to unseat President Mugabe, who has been in power since 1980.
DW correspondent Columbus Mavunga in Harare.
And of course, Crispin, we've been getting a lot of reactions about that story of Mawarire in court today. And most people are of divided opinion about Mugabe's decision to arrest him. Ali Cham from The Gambia says President Mugabe is a dictator or he is acting like one.
And Percy, a Cameroonian living in Germany, says it's the norm in Africa. If you're against the ruling power, you're an enemy and you either go to jail or get killed somehow. Freedom for Africa must come soon. There is no democracy in Africa. For exercising your civil rights, you are given bad names and punished for it. African dictators don't want to be criticized.
Lamin Fofana in Montreal, Canada, says President Robert Mugabe's government policies is like king. So a pastor accused of trying to topple the government during demos against President Mugabe is baseless. He says the Mugabe government felt threatened by the pastor's coordination of the people.
And Charles Ongole in Uganda writes, I thought Mugabe's Zimbabwe had separation of church and state as sacrosanct, since religion per se has never really threatened Mugabe's hold on to power. That Mugabe is fretted by pastors could mean he either is terminally senile or his wife, a renowned man-stroke-woman Basha, has now come of age and is calling presidential shots already.
That's a harsh one, yeah. And from Uganda, we go to Kenya, and Caleb Chauro in Nairobi says the trial of Pastor Evan Mawarire is a shame to democracy. The government should give room to be questioned, criticized, and to be advised at the same time. I hope Pastor will be given a fair trial.
I think many people do hope that he gets a fair trial, since he's been on and off in courts. Being tried for all these charges about subverting or plotting to overthrow the government. But there are some who say that he's actually fighting for a better Zimbabwe. So, of course, we'll keep the story alive here.
Keep listening. If you're just joining us, welcome to DW's Africa Link with me, Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, how important is Germany's past relation with Cameroon?
I'd say that Germany's past with Cameroon is not particularly relevant anymore. We would still know about it if there had been a more intensive relationship.
And do you trust the medicine that you are buying is the real deal?
In Africa particularly, substandard and falsified medicines are particularly common, and therefore we need to do a lot more work.
Stick around for all these stories, plus our weekend sports roundup. But first, here in Düsseldorf, what does Düsseldorf in Germany have to do with the city of Shang in Cameroon? Well, thanks to a joint research project between the Heinrich Heine University and the University of Shang, the citizens of Düsseldorf can now discover more about their city's historic relationship with the Cameroonian town, which dates back to 1895 when the Düsseldorf-born explorer Eugen Zintgraff arrived in the area. As part of the project, the two universities are hosting a two-week exhibition in Stadtmuseum Düsseldorf that runs until September 28th, where last Tuesday they hosted a podium discussion on whether a dialogue about Germany's colonial past is possible. More with Jake Davies.
Düsseldorf and Chang, cities about 5,000 kilometres apart, but with an intimate shared history, and one that sheds light on Germany, indeed Europe's colonial past with the African continent. For the locals of Chang, the impact of Germany's colonial rule is felt all over the city, from the Catholic Church to the local prison. By contrast, for the citizens of Düsseldorf, the geographical distance separating the two cities is also a cultural and historical one. Here's an interview with the Düsseldorf resident.
I'd say that Germany's past with Cameroon is not particularly relevant anymore. We would still know about it if there had been a more intensive relationship.
That answer hints at one major reason why the Heinrich Heine University and the University of Chang embarked on this joint research enterprise, namely to confront German amnesia about its colonial past.
When you look at a school or university level, there is a total amnesia. We are only beginning to grapple with this history.
That was Professor Albert Graffo, a German specialist at the University of Chang who is leading the research project on the Cameroonian side, and was a panellist on Tuesday's podium discussion about Germany's colonial exploits. Notably, the most passionate audience member at that discussion was of Cameroonian origin, although now a German citizen.
My name is Adonis Minoy. I come from Cameroon. I have lived in Germany for over 15 years now. I studied social sciences here, and I have always been interested in these kinds of podium discussions.
Minoy recounted to everyone present the humiliation he endured having to personally ask German authorities for permission to acquire a single photo of his own tribe's king, who had been imprisoned by the occupying Germans in the colonial era and his possessions confiscated.
We were granted permission to get this photo, but we believe that these things belong to us. It would be ideal for international understanding if we could take back these things for our own identity.
Yet restoring the identity of the colonised is only one pertinent reason for starting a dialogue on Europe's colonial past. For Professor Graffo, the legacy of colonialism endures today.
We know that this colonial exploitation is still going on. They don't come directly and take the products like earlier in the colonial era, but instead they say that we are cooperating while their own henchmen are doing the same as before.
Yet at the same time, the project leaders are also keen to present a more nuanced picture of colonialism. Professor Stephanie Michels, the leader of the research project on the German side, emphasised the danger of well-intentioned Europeans unwittingly perpetuating colonial stereotypes of helpless Africans needing their support. For her, recognising Africans' agency is the key to future success.
Yeah, in Cameroon, they stress in the present and in the past that they always had their agency. And it helps us to interact with people from the former colonies on an eye level.
After the research project's exhibition ends on Wednesday in Düsseldorf, it is scheduled to go to Chang in August 2018. In the meantime, the organisers will be hoping that it can kickstart a much-needed dialogue between Europe and Africa on colonialism and its enduring legacy.
Jake Davies with that report.
Health check.
Now, this might come as a surprise to you, but there's a lot of fake and substandard medicine in pharmacies across the African continent. That's according to Dr. Susan Hill, Director, Essential Medicines and Health Products Department at the World Health Organization. But that's just part of the problem. As she explained to me in an interview, access to quality medicine is another. Take a listen.
It's a really big challenge in many African countries, and we have new data, for example, to suggest that in some countries, the availability of medicines for non-communicable diseases is less than in 10% of facilities. So we clearly have a lot to do. We have a number of projects and programs that we work on to improve access to medicines. First of all, it's important that medicines and health products are good quality. So we work with countries and with sub-regions in Africa to improve regulatory systems to enable monitoring of the products that come to the market, as well as tracing and monitoring products that are on the market to make sure they're not substandard or falsified.
What steps, if any, has WHO taken to ensure that drugs in Africa are affordable and of good quality?
The first thing is we have to have transparency about prices, because without transparency, we can't start to control prices and make sure they're affordable. So WHO over the last 2 years has been working with countries to measure the price or find out what the price of products is in the community as the patient will pay. In some countries, this has then led to the implementation of laws to actually control prices. This is not yet in place in all countries, which is why some countries still have incredibly high out-of-pocket payments for patients to contribute. For quality of products, we have two main areas of work. One is to make sure that the authorities that regulate medicines in each country, so a Food and Drug Administration, are able and have the capacity to regulate it. But we also have a system in place to support countries to monitor the quality of products in the market. So they identify suspect products and we assist them to investigate them and, if necessary, take them off the market and take them appropriate steps. But this is an area where we need to do a lot more work, because we're conscious that in Africa particularly, substandard and falsified medicines are particularly common, and therefore we need to do a lot more work.
Africa carries 25% of the world's disease burden, but it only consumes only 1% of global health expenditure. So wherein lies the problem?
Yes.
And how can it be fixed?
So this is a really good question. What we see is that when we look at the investment by governments in Africa in health, that there is potential for increased investment from domestic sources, so that is by national governments, that would improve health systems. Clearly, some countries need to rely on donor funding at the moment to support their health systems. But we also see countries such as Ghana, such as Kenya, that are transitioning into middle-income country status, and there the need is for governments to invest more in health. And this shouldn't be seen as just a cost, because we know if governments invest more in health, they increase development, it supports economic growth, and it supports industrial development.
Dr. Susan Hill, Director, Essential Medicines and Health Products Department at the World Health Organization.
Another story that we have been following, Crispin, is that thousands of Nigerians uprooted from their homes by the Boko Haram insurgency hit the streets of Maiduguri Sunday in protest at food shortages and poor conditions in the refugee camp, demanding they be allowed to go home. More than 2.6 million people have been displaced by the deadly violence in northeastern Nigeria that erupted 8 years ago, forcing them into camps and host communities. So we asked this question: do you think President Muhammadu Buhari has failed on his pledges to improve the northeastern part of the country?
And on our Facebook page, Muhammad Ba from The Gambia said, I don't think one can actually say he failed, but consider his health condition after the election. And secondly, he has done lots of efforts to change the conditions of Nigerians since coming into office.
Gabriel Edwin says, if he can't silence the terrorism, that is a sign of failure.
And Uja wrote in, the problem is not from President Buhari, but from some selfish leaders from the north, trying all their best to frustrate the effort of the president.
And it's time for a round of some sports. Borussia Dortmund maintains the lead in the Bundesliga on 16 points ahead of Hoffenheim and arch-rivals Bayern Munich. But first, we start off with athletics and, of course, the Berlin Marathon.
Kenya claimed double gold after Eliud Kipchoge and Gladys Cherono won the men's and women's race respectively. Kipchoge braved wet conditions on Sunday to cross the finish line at Berlin's Brandenburg Gate in 2 hours, 3 minutes, 32 seconds, missing out on the world record by 35 seconds. Guyo Andola of Ethiopia finished second with a time of 2 hours, 3 minutes, 46 seconds, while Musinet Geremio of Ethiopia was third. Olympic 5,000 and 10,000 champion Kenenisa Bekele fell off the leading park just after the halfway mark. In the Bundesliga, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's hat-trick helped Borussia Dortmund thrash Borussia Mönchengladbach 6-1 to go 2 points clear in the Bundesliga. Dortmund are now back to the top of the table with 16 points. Let's hear what Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang had to say.
The race is on again, of course. I know it will be hard, like every time, because we know that Robert scored a lot of goals. So, yeah, I have to be focused on me, on the team, and continue on this way.
So far, Aubameyang has scored 8 league goals this season. In all the matches, Hoffenheim beat Schalke 2-0. RB Leipzig bounced back from defeat at Augsburg in midweek with a 2-1 win at home to Eintracht Frankfurt. And Mainz beat Hertha Berlin 1-0. Still on football, many Kenyans are still coming to terms with a decision by the Confederation of African Football to strip the official rights to host the 2018 African Nations Championship. CAF First Vice President Kwesi Nyantakyi says only countries with existing stadia can be to host African Nations Championship.
Those who are putting base are not going to be persons who are now coming to tell you we are constructing stadia or we are improving hotel facilities. No, it will be considered solely on the basis of those who have existing infrastructure in place.
Elsewhere, Ghana are the new champions of the West African Football Union Cup of Nations. The Black Stars thrashed Nigeria's home base, Super Eagles, 4-1 in the final match of the regional competition. Black Stars coach Maxwell Kunadu was full of praise for his players, who he says did not disappoint. Nigeria's Super Eagles captain and goalkeeper, Ikechukwu Ezinwa, said conceding 4 goals in the final game was part of football, describing Ghana as the better side. In North Africa, an Egyptian court has jailed 2 people for life and 12 more to between 2 and 10 years over violence that led to a deadly football stadium stampede in Cairo. At least 19 people died in the disaster after police fired tear gas at fans who tried to push their way into the stadium in February 2015. The defendants faced charges including murder, thuggery and vandalism and were accused of clashing with police leading to the stampede.
DW's sports correspondent in Nigeria, Samson Omale.
Another story that is making a heated debate on social media. Kenya's chief prosecutor has ordered an investigation into the Election Commission for alleged irregularities and illegalities in the conduct of August's annulled presidential poll.
Franz Ngumu said on Twitter, "You will save Kenya a lot if you conduct these elections without being partisan."
And in the meantime, President Uhuru Kenyatta has said the ballot box was the only path to the presidency, and those in the opposition angling for power sharing were doomed to fail.
Well, first we'll start off with this one from Brisbane Bakano, who wrote back saying, "Correct, but must be free, fair, transparent and credible. And this is what NASA stands for. Jubilee Bora Uchaguzi, NASA Uchaguzi Bora."
That's something that. Swahili there.
Yeah.
Exactly. Justine Del Cruz tweeted, "The path must be cleaned. I mean, IEBC infrastructure must be fully reformed if you care about your voters."
Masioka Musemi wrote, "Germany holds elections in 73,500 polling stations manned by volunteers. Votes are counted, announced and transmitted electronically to headquarters."
And then Daniel Wasilwa wrote, "Remove Chiloba fast." Chiloba here is the CEO of the Electoral Commission in Kenya.
Well, this is an interesting one. Uhuru Kenyatta sent out a tweeted, "The opposition has no authority to threaten IEBC." And he got some backlash from his followers.
Omengo Orango said, replied and said, neither does the government have a moral authority to condone corruption and protect IEBC that stole election in its favor.
Prince Carlo also said, neither is the government to threaten the judiciary and call judges' names.
And we have to leave it at that. That's all we have time for. Thank you for joining us. From me, Crispin Mwakideo.
And me, Zipporah Nyambura. Bye-bye.